Good morning.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Hi, Jim.
How are you this morning?
Good, thank you. How are you doing?
Doing very well, thank you.
You got a chance to look over the new verses? What's that?
I have, but I don't see how they tie into the previous verses.
Right. It's very difficult without the commentary.
Hi, good morning, Rabbi. This is Nachshon.
Good morning, Nachshon. How are you?
Baruch Hashem, how are you?
Good, Baruch Hashem. Doing all right. Hi, good morning to everybody.
Good morning, Rabbi. Good morning.
Good morning, Rabbi.
How are you doing, Daryl?
How are you?
All right, thank God. How are you doing?
Thank God. Thank God for the Jewish Times.
Oh, you enjoyed it?
Yeah. I also was reading, Porsches. I got so involved, I went a few Porsches too far. I was trying to figure out all the travelings of Yaakov and Avraham going back in time and going forward, like all the different cities, where they are, what's today, why they're existing today. So, anyways, it was good. Thank you.
Good, my pleasure. Is Doug and Cal, are you there? Well, let's wait a minute, wait for everybody to join. Responses? You mean the reactions?
Yeah.
So far, so good.
No, I know I've enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm constantly going back and just tweaking it and doing more edits as I go along. You know, just minor things. Thank you.
Have to do a lot of work.
It's a good labor to be involved in.
Yes, absolutely. I have a friend who is very musical, and gives performances, and she says, music gives life. And I said, yeah, music gives life, but Torah gives life.
Yeah.
Torah is really what gives life. Music is just a side thing.
Right.
It's the helper.
I guess we should start. I'm not sure if Doug Cowell, are you there yet? That's why I don't know if they join. I know they have classes. So why don't we start? And no pun intended, but I hope we can shed some light on these verses. If you looked ahead, you'll understand. So we're in Koheles, chapter 11, verse 7. That's what we're up to. So up to this point, we previously concluded about his discussion of how man relates to wealth and the different facets, the different emotions that come into play, the person who's looking constantly for 100% security, which is impossible. So he has to act, even though he doesn't know exactly how things will pan out. In terms of his productivity, in terms of his life and children, that just as he learned and he was married and he had children when he was younger, he should continue that when he's older, because he doesn't know which will produce an upright son. It could be the child you had when you were younger, but don't, you know, put all your eggs in one basket. Keep having children when you're older too. And same thing with your learning. It kind of uses the metaphor of planting in the morning and planting in the evening. So the morning and the evening correlating to the morning of life and the evening of life. Okay, so now let's take on some new area. Let's forge further. So he says as follows. Sweet is the light and good to the eyes to see the sun. I mean, it sounds like it's coming out of left field. And what does he mean? And he goes on and he says that if a person will live many years. So in all of them, let him rejoice, and they should remember the days of darkness, because there will be many. All that comes. And then he says futility. So how does that fit in when he says the word futility over there? Interesting also is that he starts off verse 7 when he says, and sweet is the light. So and can't be disjointed from the previous area. So again, we're always very meticulous about understanding what the sequence of the verses are, what the context is of a verse, why he mentions it subsequent to previous area. But the first verse here, which we're in 7, it seems, how does it relate to 8? 7 says that sweet is light and good to the eyes to see the sun. And then he goes on to about the person's years. If a person lives many years, in all of them he should be happy. And if you remember the days of darkness, for there will be many. All that comes, futility. And how does the word futility fit in there? And then he continues and he says the young man should be glad in his youth and he should do goodness to his heart in the days of his youth and go in the ways of his heart and then how his eyes see fit, and he should know that in all these things God will bring him to judgment. And then he ends by saying that a person should remove anger from his heart and pass away evil from his skin, because youth and being young is futility. So again, he talks about futility. And then but it seems to be the next verse is tied in, because he keeps on talking about youth. He says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth, until the evil days come, and you will reach days where you say that you have no desire, until the sun does not become dark and light and the moon and the stars return. Excuse me, the moon and the stars, and the clouds return after the rain. So you see a few verses dealing about youth.
Isn't there one comment there that says you will be judged?
Well, that's the actual, that's the verse, says it. The end of verse 9 says that.
But that's related to everything after regarding you that follow your heart and you will be judged. And everything is futile, meaning maybe when you're young and lacking wisdom and you follow your heart, whatever you think is good, it's maybe not really good because you're chasing things that are hevel, that are futile.
Right, that's true.
You will search for those until you gain wisdom. And then the days of darkness are many. I'm sure everybody agrees that life is troublesome and it's you're looking more for the happiness more than the worrisome days, more the darker days.
Well, the days of darkness, I think they refer to as death.
Oh, and the light.
But you see, he does contrast, like you're saying. He does contrast, like even in verse 8. If a person lives many days, let him be happy in all them, but he should remember the days of darkness, for there will be many. And that, the commentaries say, that's the grave. And he does that again in 9. He says, let the young man be happy in his youth and be good to his heart in the days of his youth and go in the ways of his heart. What does he mean by heart? But he says, and also in what his eyes see, so he should know that in all these God will bring him to judgment. That means that there's a contrast being made about what you're doing. In both those verses, in both 8 and 9, you notice the contrast.
Right.
Why do you think that is?
Youth is your going after your heart. That's what most people do when they're young. They go after the first thing. And the contrast, like the Shema, it says you shouldn't go after your heart. Right?
Right.
Don't follow your heart and your eyes. And here he's saying, go after, in your youth, go after your heart. And he didn't say eyes here, right?
No, he says, and be good to your heart, not go after. No, he does, you're right, he does say. But the question is, what does your heart mean here? Wouldn't sound like good advice. What would he tell you to do that?
Well, he's saying go after it. You know, don't not live. God gave us life to live. But remember that it's all hevel. It's all futile.
Well, he wouldn't be telling you to go after things that are futile. There's got to be something which is positive, and he's telling you to do it. Okay, well, let's take a look at the commentators. Like I was telling Jim before, that it's pretty difficult to understand this without the commentaries.
But you like to cheat?
Yeah, you're definitely supposed to cheat.
Okay.
That is something I tell everybody. Okay. Interesting, though, it says, if you take a look at the verses, So even the verse, again, as a statement of the rabbis, that a verse cannot be interpreted which is against its literal meaning. That means the literal meaning of a verse has to be the foundation of everything else that we say subsequent to that. So the first verse that we started with, it says, tell me what the problems are. And sweet is light, and it's good to the eyes to see the sun. I can't hear you, Jim.
Rabbi, my first problem is one that you mentioned, but that's really hanging me up. It's that first word, and. Like, what? How does light we've been talking about? I mean, what does that have to do with charity and wealth?
Okay, good. So what is this verse? It starts off, and sweet is light. That seems to be showing there's a connection between what we just discussed about wealth. So in order to answer that, we'll have to understand really what the subject of the verse is. But there's a problem. What's the problem in the verse? So Ibn Ezra, he addresses it. And he says, this verse is connected with what comes afterwards. Okay, we've already made that observation. And he says that light is sweet, but it's not something that you can eat. So the term sweetness in connection with light is a problem. So it can't be referring to something you eat. And this primarily means that because of the joining of all man's senses in one place on his head, and he says there's a word that's referred to for all of these sensations. And he says, for example, let me just translate this properly here. There's a word that is known as a reference to these senses that also is used for other senses. And he gives, for example, when Isaac was about to bless Esau, but it was really Jacob in front of him, and he smelt the garment, which his mother Rivka intelligently dressed him up with Esav's clothing. So he smelled like the field. And this is the point that Isaac was still in doubt who's in front of him, because the voice was the voice of Jacob, but the hands were the hands of Esav, because he put on the goat skin. So then he brought him close, he kissed him, and then he smelt the garments, because Rivka anticipated that they would have some sort of an embrace, and that she knew that this would be something that Isaac would pick up on. So Isaac's response was, I see that the scent of my son is like the scent of the field that God has blessed. And then he was convinced that that must have been Esav in front of him. But what Ibn Ezra is bringing this in for is he's saying that although Isaac was blind, he says, I see that the scent of my son is like the scent of the field. So see can't be applicable to a blind person. So it means a realization. Like a person says, after he's explained an idea, he says, oh, I see. So Ibn Ezra is saying over here that seeing means something other than sight. And he says also that all the people by Mount Sinai, they saw the thunder. You can't see thunder. But they understood that this was generated by God. That's what it means, they saw the thunder. They saw in the thunder, they saw in this miraculous event, it could only have been orchestrated by God. And he says the matter is that he attaches this verse, this first verse, at the beginning, I guess, he means that a person, what's the meaning? A person should be regularly involved in the good, and he should not engage in other happiness. So he says that sweet is light, and it's good to the eyes to see the sun. So you see both of the verses that Ibn Ezra quotes are references to something regarding God. Because Isaac said that I see the scent of my son is like the scent of the field that God has blessed. And then the people at Sinai said that they saw the thunder, which God orchestrated. And you wouldn't have a statement by King Solomon, one of the wisest man next to Moses, to simply be praising light. So Targum says that this is referring to the Torah. And that's what he means also, the person should be involved in the good. That's what Ibn Ezra means. And Swarno says the following. He says, sweet is light. And he says, that which a person attains, where he raises upright children, this is a very considerable good. Because the eternal light is something which is reached by a person's intelligence. And this is something which is very sweet and praiseworthy and high and elevated. And then he says on the verse, on the words, and it's good to the eyes, it's good to the eyes to see the sun. So he says, well, to my eyes, this is the tzelem, this is man's intelligence. And it's the power of man for the good, to see the sun and to live in his temporal life, because in that life he will acquire with his actions an eternal perfection. Like the rabbis say, better is one moment in this world in Torah and in good actions, right, from all compared to, in contrast to the entire next world. Meaning here is where a person can attain the good for himself eternally. You only have a limited time. And he says further that if a person is going to live many years, this is still Swarno, all of them he should rejoice. And Swarno says, I say that the life in this world is good regularly to our intelligence. Because even a person will live many years, he should be happy in all of them. And he should continually add to his completeness. And he should rejoice in his gladness over wisdom. Like the rabbis say, the work is not upon you to complete, but you have no right to exempt yourself from it. So he's bringing in a contrast. And remember, we just said earlier there's a contrast. And Sforno says further, you should remember the days of darkness, because there will be many. And his commentary on that is as follows. It is fitting that a person should be zealous to attain what he is able to in terms of perfection while he's still in this life. And you should remember the days that will come after death. Those are the darkness, which are unable to attain the light. And he should not cease from striving to achieve this during his life. Because in the days of darkness, after death, you will not have the ability to attain this light. Okay. So you see now, he's talking about that verse there about, that we mentioned as a contrast. So the first thing is really, let's answer Jim's question. So what does this mean, and sweet is the light? So what do you mean, and? You can't start off a new area with and. Therefore, there must be some context. There must be some relationship between what we just discussed. So I would say simply that we discussed about wealth and how a person should manage it and his worth in his work ethic. But you can't leave that as man's purpose. That's necessary. But now what King Solomon is doing is saying, now look at what the real ultimate is for man. So now he moves from his discussion about one facet of life to talking about what the optimum is. That's why he says, and sweet is the light. Meaning now let me show you what the real optimum in life is. So that's why he says, and. But he, nonetheless, he says, like the verse says, that it's sweet. It's a very enjoyable thing. This is really where the person's satisfaction has to be derived. Wealth may be something, but this is where the sweetness is. So there's two things he says. He says the light is sweet. That means that's a reference to the very essence of wisdom. And it's good to the eyes. That's now referring to man's relationship to it. So the object of your pursuit is a very good thing. Wisdom is something which really is like light. It gives a person like the light of day. So the metaphor is a very good metaphor. Sweet as oil, and it's good for the eyes to look at the sun. Who doesn't enjoy seeing the sun? It's something which revives a person's soul. It really has an effect psychologically. God designed us in that way. So King Solomon is using that as a springboard to now use as a metaphor for wisdom, because that's something which really gives a person, because you know the person can enjoy the sun, but it's not something you can do all day long. Wisdom is a pursuit you can be involved all day, and it keeps on invigorating the person, and it amazes him, it stuns his mind at what he sees. At times he's he's blown over by great new insights. But keep in mind that it's not just when you say that it's natural for a person to appreciate the sun, you have to appreciate is God's design. God gave that to man as a gift. You won't see an animal looking at the sun and smiling. It does not have that reaction. An animal is not designed to have that appreciation. So King Solomon uses that as his metaphor. So number one, it's sweet. The light itself is sweet. Number two, it's good to the eyes, meaning a person who has eyes, the reaction is something which God designed too, and that's something which he's saying is a metaphor for wisdom. But there's something which you can't, that may be true, but then he has to go on. And he continues, and he says now this contrast. He says, if a person lives many years, let him be happy in all of them, but remember the days of darkness, because they will be many. So why does he have to bring that in? And he says, Ibn Ezra says as follows, even if a person knows that he's going to live many years, he should be happy in all of them. Let me just make sure I'm reading it properly. If it were that man would know that he would live many years, and he'd be happy in all of them, when he remembers the days of the darkness, that those are the days of the grave, that they are many, this will embitter the light that we just mentioned. And everything that comes afterwards. So this will be a futility. So he says the matter is, the person should understand that everything which comes to the earth, just like he said in the first chapter, a generation goes and a generation comes. So it's all hevel. It's all futility. So he has to have a contrast that, I mean, there's a balance. A person does enjoy life, but it can't be without the knowledge of the ultimate state of the person. And that's where the person's soul is no longer in the body. So there has to be this balance. That's why I believe he says this verse, he constructs verse 8 to say that even if a person lives many years, let him be happy, meaning you have to have the happiness. But the happiness, we already said, is going to come from what the greatest happiness is in the man, and that's his wisdom. That's his involvement in wisdom and enjoying the Torah system, whether it's philosophy or Talmudic study, or understanding, digging into the laws and understanding what the various purposes of a given mitzvah are. And he starts to realize the great mind that constructed all of this. This gives the person the highest level of satisfaction in life. A person's not designed that he could just simply be engaged in the physical and that's going to give him satisfaction. Every physical pursuit is limited in time, in satisfaction. And a person could even damage himself with too much energy in any given pursuit that's physical. But the world of intelligence, that's something which has no end to it. And it doesn't tire a person physically. And the satisfaction that he gets, we're designed in a way that is something which we derive the greatest satisfaction. And there is no frustration. Like Rabbi Chait explained years ago, that even when a person makes a mistake in his studies, that itself is knowledge. He just learned that he had an incorrect idea, and now he has a true idea. So there's no such thing as an error in the pursuit of wisdom. So that means there's no frustration. And this applies both to the Torah and to natural law. And we know that the great scientists would spend weeks on end trying to figure out new theorems and experiments, and it's something which they became so absorbed in, demonstrating how satisfied they were. Okay. All right, so far so good. Any questions?
Rabbi, this is Doc Schneider. I was going to add something that in verse 8, it's kind of, I'm kind of confused. How can you enjoy all your days knowing that basically, I know darkness refers to death, but some commentaries also refer to, you know, just troubled times, you know, the ups and downs of life. And how can you enjoy all your days knowing that you're going to have ups and downs, unless you see the bad times as instructive and positive to help you stay on the course? I'm wondering if I'm missing something, or what your thoughts are.
Well, even if you'll take that explanation, that the dark days are mishaps in life, it's a person has to understand that a person only gives gravity and then value to something based on his philosophy. But if a person has the correct philosophy, so what will typically bother another person, like petty comments behind my back, a person who's intelligent and wise and pursues wisdom, he's not really involved in the whole world, you know, the social sphere. Although the majority of people are, the person who really values what's most important, he's not bothered by these things. So there may be ups and downs, there may be monetary issues, there may be social issues, but if a person is focused on what really matters, so those things are like in a water off a duck's back. It doesn't really affect him. So the greater the attachment the person has to what's real, what really matters, what's eternal, so that in proportion to his attachment to the good will be the decrease in what he values as being concerns. But I think the better understanding here is that it's a reference to that there has to be a balance a person strikes, meaning what he's teaching you in verse 8 is that in order to have the correct understanding and the correct attitude in life, it has to be offset by the fact that life is temporary. There has to be the full picture. So of course you can't walk around all day thinking of death. That's a morbid thing, and it can be disturbing. And there's even a verse that King Solomon says that also the world God has planted in man's heart. Meaning that this sense of immortality is a creation that God made in man's psyche. A person does get up every day thinking they'll have a good day, and he's not thinking about death. And if a person thought about that he's going to die today, he wouldn't work, he wouldn't build a house, he wouldn't get married, he wouldn't have kids, he wouldn't pursue anything. So there has to be a certain amount of a denial of his mortality, meaning there has to be some sense of the immortality fantasy. That's something which God made. But at the same time, there has to be a balance. But there's also the stress, like Sforno says, that you have to understand that the time here is limited and you shouldn't waste time. And even though it's not upon us to complete the study of Torah, which you can't do humanly, nonetheless, we have no right to just walk away from it and do nothing. That's what it says in Pirkei Avos. And he also quotes the verse. He quotes the saying of the rabbis that one moment in this world is worth more than all the life in the next world. But in what capacity does he say that? He means in terms of your attainment of perfection, that it is only limited to this life. There are no mitzvahs. There are no commands in the next world. There is no ability to perfect yourself greater.
Okay? Rabbi.
Okay. Now what comes next seems to be a repetition. Didn't he just tell us this? Look at verse 9 now. So now he says, let the young man be glad in his youth and do good to his heart in the days of his youth, and go in the ways of his heart and in the ways of his eyes. But know that in all matters God will bring him to judgment. What is the purpose then of this verse? Yes.
I'm wondering why this limits it out.
Could you say that again? You broke off.
I don't understand why he just limits it to childhood. Why he doesn't include just your whole life? Just childhood. You don't have the wisdom that you would have as an adult. So you're going to follow things that you think are fun or. Just feel good and that kind of thing.
Right. Well, he does say in the previous verse that if a person is going to live many days, let him be happy in all of them. Meaning be involved in the good in all of them. So there he does cover the entire span of life. But your question is still valid because here he seems to omit it. He's clearly talking about infantry when you're, you know, when you're an infant, and then bachur when you become like a young man. But he doesn't talk about adulthood. Why is that? That's the question. That question is going to give us the answer, by the way.
Maybe by omitting anything past youth, it's saying to follow your heart and your eyes, meaning that once you get older and now you know, you gotta follow the real true things that are good for your heart, which is the Torah.
But he doesn't talk about getting older in this verse.
Right. Well, it's a passive omission. It's a, you know, it's like leaving something out, so you can infer from that that it's the opposite for. If you change the sentence around, you know, follow your heart in your youth, but remember it's futile, and in your older days you could make the negative of that, that when you're wise, that maybe you learn to follow what's good, Torah and mitzvahs, and that's not futile.
I agree with your idea, but I would not agree that that's what he's saying in the verse. The verses, the words don't say that.
There's more to it.
See, I believe what he's doing here is that if you look at the structure, and you know, I was looking this over for hours, so this is no simple matter. But I finally saw that there is a sequence. He first talks in verse 7 about what the good is. And of course, he hints to it by using the word sweet in connection with light, which is inappropriate, like Ibn Ezra says. Light cannot be sweet. So it must be talking about something else. So, and all the commentaries that I saw say it was referring to wisdom. And of course, that's the thing to be praised. Not just a visual looking at the sun doesn't make sense to praise it. It's good as a verse because it gives us a starting point, some sense of what the analogy is. And Torah, many places, talks about it, refers to Torah as light. It's something which is a good metaphor. But now once we understand that, and it's talking about wisdom, then he says now that has to be coupled in 8 with a realization that we have a certain amount, there's a certain urgency. And that you should use the time that you have because it is limited. But now he gives one more piece of the puzzle. And I'll read you what Sforno says on this. He says it openly. And you should be good to your heart in the days of your youth. So he says as follows. That which you attain then will straighten you to attain and increase in perfection in your older days. Meaning to say that now that he told you what the good is in verse 7, and he told you that there has to be an approach, that there's an urgency, that there's a temporary amount of time. Nonetheless, a person should be enjoying it, but now he gives you the prescription. How do you go about doing it? When must it start to have the greatest success? It has to start at youth. He now tells you the method of application of the principle. He tells you what has to be done, but now he gives you the optimum prescription about how to go about doing it. That's why Sforno says, that which you attain in youth will strengthen you to increase in your perfection in your older days. Like the rabbis say, if you listened in a long time ago, then you'll listen in the newer days.
Is there a connection with generally most people will say that they remember their childhood with good good memories. So is there a connection with that while you're young, you know, in your youth, those are some of the best days of your life? And so Shlomo HaMelech then is trying to even emphasize that, you know, we should take advantage of that, you know, living a good life, following the Torah as early as we can.
Well, I think the idea is that it's sort of like, you know, you have to bust the Bronco. So if a person does not learn the acceptance of authority and to train himself in, governing his emotions with his intelligence when he's younger, it's going to be very difficult when he gets older, because he set up certain pathways, emotional behaviors, and he hasn't really trained his emotions from youth to subdue all the hot passions. So I believe that's what he's saying here, is that the person has to be happy at youth, meaning that happiness and wisdom, that pursuit, has to start when you're younger. Let them start gauging it at that, because if you let the emotions go unbridled until adulthood, so now that's become very difficult to start restraining. All right, that's exactly what Sforno says. It's true, people do have fond memories, but I don't think he's talking about that here. He's not talking about that concept.
Okay.
And you see, he brings in this verse that in all matters, God will judge you. So that's telling you that the acceptance of authority, clearly, and that there's repercussions for your actions, and the person's held accountable. So that's why you have to start a person at youth. As soon as a person's like 5 or 6, you start bringing him to the to Hebrew school. You start teaching him right away. When he's, when he's attained that level. And he continues, you see, in verse 10, he says, remove anger from your heart, and remove and pass over evil from your skin. Because youth and, by chakras and a young age, it's futile. Meaning these aspects of it. Let's just see what the Ibn Ezra says on this. So he just gives an explanation, why is it called Shacharis? Why is youth called Shacharis? So Shacharis can mean like from the word morning, or Shachar also can mean darkness. It means dark hair, referring to when you're younger, your hair is dark. But it means youth. But why does he bring in now these two things? Let's understand the verse. He says, remove anger from your heart. That's one area. See, a heart is one area, and anger. So what's the problem with anger? So Rabbi Chaya once explained, anger is akin to idolatry. Because what's idolatry? Idolatry is where a person distorts reality, and he says that this object is really the cause of the world. He takes an inanimate stone or piece of wood, he carves it a certain way, and he projects beliefs onto it. So anger is the same thing. Anger is what a person does when he encounters a situation that's intolerable and he wants to change it. So that's something which rabbis say there are two character traits in a person. That there's many character traits, there's many emotions, there's many attitudes that we have. But two of them we should never give into at all. All the other ones, they should be the middle extreme. Never be too miserly and never be too giving. You have to protect your wealth. Don't be too morbid and don't be too giddy and happy. Be in the middle, be in control. Rabbi Chaya explained beautifully the reason for that is because by being equidistant from the two poles of a spectrum of a given emotion. So let's say you're talking about the attachment to money, that emotion. So don't be at one extreme or the other extreme, because the closer you get to the extreme, the more the gravity it has on you, and it's harder to detach yourself from it. When you're equidistant from both poles, then the person is neutral. He's not moving one way or the other. And that will allow his mind to be free from the emotion, to be involved in following intelligence. Every act in a person, every thought, everything a person does in his life should be governed by his intelligence. But you can't follow your intelligence if you're being pulled by emotions. So that's why the rabbis say to be equidistant from both poles in any emotional spectrum, except anger and arrogance. Anger, those you go to the opposite extreme. Never get angry and never feel arrogance. Because in terms of anger, if you're a person that expresses anger, that means that you can't accept reality. And that's the worst crime in terms of a person pursuing wisdom. Wisdom is the opposite, where you do accept reality, no matter what the consequence. But a person who gets angry, that means that they're not willing to follow what is real. And our lives is all about using our senses and intelligence to determine what's true, what's real, and how to live and to comply with reality. The person who complies with reality has a good life. Person who fights reality and goes against how the world operates, they'll have a miserable life. So anger is something which it should never be involved in. So why did God create anger if we should never be engaged in it? Because the emotion itself can have good effects if a person uses it, if he harnesses that. Because Rambam says, there's one example. He says, although you should never be angry, he says, any Talmud Chacham, any wise individual who doesn't take revenge like a snake is not a real wise person. But it doesn't mean that you feel revenge. You feel anger. It means you display it. It's necessary at times in life to display anger to a student, to a son, to a friend, to demonstrate your passion about a certain idea. But you don't, you're not giving in to anger. You're feigning that in order to drive a point home if a person won't listen to reason alone. Sometimes the anger. So therefore, the anger is something which then is a good in terms that since people know what anger is, they understand that if a person expresses it, they must really mean what they're saying if they say something in anger. But you're never supposed to give into the emotion. You utilize it. So that's why God created it, because it will have a good effect on the recipient if an intelligent person uses anger properly. He uses the display of anger properly, I should say. So anger is something which has to be removed, because in terms of this pursuit of wisdom, this is the biggest crime. All right, this is the nemesis of a life of wisdom. So that's one thing. But then he also, and that's from the heart, because the heart here he's referring to the inner workings of a person. But then he also says, remove evil from your skin, meaning skin is your physical. That means your actions. So not only is your internal world have to have the control, but your actions also. So don't do evil. And then he explains that these are really just outgrowths from youth, and they're in the futile. Because youth and young age, these remnants of where a person who's a child acts on the emotions all the time. So these are futile. These are things that go against your plan. So now you see why he brings that up at the end, because this now reflects back on this entire discussion, this whole treatment of wisdom. And in verse 9, let's just stress, like Sforno says, the heart there refers to intelligence, because the heart can mean both. The heart, like Rashi says, when you're told in the Shema to serve God with all of your heart, so Rashi says, your instincts and your intelligence. But at times, heart refers to one or the other, but you have to know the context. So when he says that a person should go in the ways of his heart, when the young person should go in the ways of his heart, Sforno says, in the ways of his intelligence, in order that he attains the good. All right, so now we see a full picture of this treatment. But he doesn't end there. He goes on and he says in 12:1, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Until you reach the days that are evil, and you attain, and you reach the years where you say they have no desire in them. So what's his idea here? So Rashi quotes a statement from Pirkei Avos. So Akiva, the son of Mahalalel, said, a person should ponder on three things, and he won't come to sin. And one of them is that, the fact that he is created, is a creator. That he came, I think one of the ideas, I'm not sure if this is the exact one, but that you came from a putrid drop of semen. So that type of a concept, that it humbles the person. Rabbi Chait said years ago. And knowing that you came from there and then you're going to the grave is another humbling concept. So this is an addition to what we said earlier. That if a person, see, a lot of where the emotions come from is pride, ego. But if a person sees his beginning and sees his end, clearly, honestly, that will have a strong effect on steering him away from what he wants for himself, and it'll direct him more towards the Creator. Because he'll look at himself as a created thing. He'll look at himself, I'm a created thing, I didn't make myself. I came here into the world like a putrid drop of semen. I'm going to end up in a grave full of maggots. I'm going to give and I have to give an account of my life when it's over. But interesting, he says that you should remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Until you come to those days, before you get to the days that are evil, and you reach the years where you say that I have no desire in them. So Rashi says these are the days of old days and of weakness. So what it's telling you is that there's one way a person will cease from corrupt actions. That's when he's too old to do them. and he has no desire anymore. So the real perfection, however, when a person controls himself when he's younger, and he has full capacity, but then he does not sin. So King Solomon is saying that this is really the point of perfection. Perfection is really when you can do something, you hold back. That's what Maimonides says. Rambam says that in Laws of Repentance, that what is repentance? When a person has regret on his previous sins, and he also accepts not to do it in the future. So that's predicated on the fact that he has the ability to do it. But then he goes one step further. He says that's called teshuva, that's called repentance. But what's complete repentance? When the person is in the same exact situation and he refrains. And he gives an illustration. A person is with a woman that he loves, and he holds himself back from sinning because of the teshuva. So there he's illustrating that the greatest, not that a person should put himself and tempt himself, but if he finds himself in that same situation and he doesn't do it, that's the most complete repentance a person could do. Because that's where he was in full capacity of the very sin that he did in the past, but he didn't do it. And he had the ability to do it. So the real perfection that he's talking about here, and again, we don't care about the chapters, because these days were made by the Gentiles. So that's why this verse is still connected with the previous conversation. 12:1 continues from 11:10. So that's why he says, remember your Creator in the days of youth. Meaning, remember the concept that you are created. That will have a very strong effect. But do this in your days of youth, until you get to the days where they're evil. Meaning, the days where you just don't have the passion anymore. And he goes on, we'll do next week 12:2, but he seems to continue with this. Until there is not become dark, the sun, and then the light, maybe means sight, and then the moon and the stars, and then they return the clouds after the rain. Meaning before it gets to that point. But we'll have to see why he has to illustrate it further. But you see how the whole thing flows now. Okay, so let me stop here and see if there's any questions or comments. Okay. Okay, so for next Sunday, look forward. So now we're up to 12:2, and we'll see how it continues. And this is now the last chapter. All right, and he goes into a lot of illustrations here. So you'll take a look if you want to just read further a bit, and we'll get more of the context of where he's going. All right.
Okay.
Okay, so a good week to everybody. Have a good week. And we'll pick up Sunday next week the same time, all right?
Thank you, Rabbi. Be well, everybody. Have a good week.
Okay.